This ambassador would have to stay in frequent contact with Voyager.
Certainly.
It would be difficult for me to run this ship without you, Neelix. But that might be a sacrifice I'd be willing to make. For the greater good of Starfleet. Of course, the assignment would be entirely voluntary. You wouldn't be interested, would you?
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, getting ready to meet Geordi's mom, Worf's half-brother, foster brother, Picard's long-lost, not really a son, you know, every long-lost family member you could ever think of.
So much to explore. And why are we mentioning these characters, folks? Because this week we are going to rank Star Trek's final seasons. This seems like a topic that's particularly of note at this moment as we prepare to launch into Star Trek Discovery's final season. And we really want to explore how many shows have done it well, like ended their season run properly.
Yeah, I mean, we've examined, you know, whether the series finales can stick the landing, have some interesting discussions there. You know, you can compare something like Turnabout Intruder from the original series and whether that really affected the TOS legacy. And you and I think we agreed that it did not. But then there's These Are the Voyages, and I think that did hurt Enterprise's legacy. And so that's one thing, talking about the series finale. But going into a final season, I think that's an entirely different animal. And whether the writers have it in mind that they do want to wrap up threads, or whether they're just kind of doing things a little haphazardly. And so I think this will be kind of an interesting discussion on like how effective every series, regardless of where you might rank the series personally, but how effective, you know, every series is at having a final season that kind of does the job that a final season needs to do.
And also, when you look at a lot of the Star Trek shows, or any show you love out there, really, people tend to look at the highlight reels of what makes those shows so special. How many of those episodes actually fall in the final season? And that's something I think of particular note in Star Trek, with some of the all-time most loved, you know, TV shows in Star Trek history, maybe not exactly performing at their top caliber with that final season, in addition to perhaps not wrapping up as much as you'd, or as well as you'd like.
Yeah, we're going to have some interesting conversations about some of these final seasons that I think kind of get by on the legacy of the series. There's more than one show here.
There's a few.
Yeah, but like, it's interesting because, yeah, like so far in the Kurtzman era, we've only had one final season leading into Star Trek Discovery's fifth and final season next month. You know, that would be Picard season 3. And I don't know, for me, Picard, the series, it always seemed as if like a limited run was built into its DNA. Like, I don't know, like I never expected it to run 7 seasons. Did you?
No. It seemed like when Patrick Stewart signed on, I'd have to go back in time, but I feel like I might have been even surprised that he was going to do 3 seasons. I think I initially thought maybe it was just going to be a 1 season thing.
I think that was just kind of what the assumption was. But then, I think Alex Kurtzman said like, yeah, you know what? We're going to do 3 seasons. And I was like, oh, okay then. Or maybe he even said, no, we'll do multiple seasons. And it took me by surprise, but I was like, okay, look, if Picard season 1 is what they gave us to start, I'd like to see them try to improve after that.
Well, and you and I looked at each other and said, they clearly have a lot of story to tell.
There's a real vision behind this, a very big creative auteur-driven vision behind this follow-up to one Jean-Luc Picard.
It's going to be an arc, a grand arc, unlike any we've seen before. Well, that part, I guess, was true. It was unlike anything we'd seen before.
Yeah. This is what happens when you make things up as you go along, people. And it was interesting because, you know, very recently, Terry Metalis, the showrunner for season 3 of Picard, he kind of admitted what we'd been hearing about from behind the scenes, though, with Picard season 2, is that they were just writing it up, like making it up as they went along. Like, it was just like kind of had to trash the scripts they had originally written for season two. It kind of fell victim to COVID-19, and they were just making it up as they went along. And boy, did it feel like that.
Has Terry Metalis become like a professional Star Trek interview subject? I feel like he's everywhere talking about Star Trek these days.
I think he's probably the biggest fan of this series that's ever been able to be a showrunner. And like just kind of the geeky kind of fan. Maybe Manny Coto, you know, like he passed away recently, but he was a showrunner for season four of Enterprise. And you could tell he was such a Star Trek geek. And, you know, it's kind of too bad that, you know, we didn't get like one other iteration of Star Trek with Manny Coto at the helm.
Yeah, no, that's a good, good call out there. Because, yeah, a lot of them, I think of like Brennan Braga, who obviously wrote a lot of TNG, but he was not a like diehard lifelong Star Trek fan when he stepped in to take over. And even when you look at the movies, you had J.J. Abrams relaunching the entire franchise in 2009, but not a Star Trek guy.
I think the only one who would be a self-proclaimed like hardcore Star Trek fan showrunner would have been Michael Chabon, who did season one of Picard. And that, again, that one fell victim to them kind of tossing out all the scripts that they had. And from what I understand, like from episode four onwards, they're just kind of making it up as they went along from season one of Picard.
What about Michael Piller? Did he have a history with like being really into the original series?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So, okay, well, why don't we jump into it? Star Trek, the original series. A very wobbly final season. It was picked up at the very last minute due to a fan campaign. I think some of the most influential writers of the show had departed by the time season three got underway. I think it's a little unfairly derided at times. You know, for every "And the Children Shall Lead," you get an Enterprise incident. You know, for every "The Way to Eden," you get a Tholian web. You know, but Cam, this is not an era where you go into your third season and the writers of the 1960s are like, okay, how do we wrap up all the ongoing character arcs and story threads for Star Trek going into the season? I think, you know, they're just kind of going with it. It really was more of a haphazard season, but I think we still got some gold nuggets out of the third season of the original series. And quite honestly, I don't know if we can quite really compare the original series to all the other shows that we're going to talk about for the rest of this conversation.
No, it was so episodic. And the quality of season three is so interesting because, as you said, like there are a lot of duds. And I would say some of the worst episodes of the entire run of the original series are in season three. You know, "And the Children Shall Lead," for example. The Space Hippies episode, "The Way to Eden," is no gem. The Empath is just brutal. But at the same time, when you are putting out a Star Trek season and you have episodes like the Enterprise incident, for example, "Day of the Dove," there are some like really great stories. You know, "Let That Be Your Last Battlefield" is not a top tier Star Trek episode, but it's a very iconic episode. Like, it manages to contain just enough genius that I think it makes the season worth watching. The one thing I always noted, though, when I, you know, go back and do my rewatches of season three, it feels like in season three, they kind of like drop B stories. A lot of the time you are on the Enterprise or a replica of the Enterprise or something like that, or a easily available set they had at their disposal. A lot of alternate Earth scenarios. And you just spend a lot of time with whoever the main character of the week is wandering around that area without cutting away to things. The way you had in earlier seasons, for example, there's the episode where Sulu and some crew members are stranded on a planet, like a snowy, icy planet, and they're warming up rocks to stay warm. You don't get that sort of thing in season three as much. It's more like, well, you're just going to follow Kirk for an hour because we don't have the money to kind of build these little separate side stories. So I tend to find when I hit a rough patch in season three, it's those types of moments where they're just dragging out a story that's not that interesting.
What do you think of the cost savings measures in which they're like, you know what, let's see what is going on in the Paramount lot this week and what sets and costumes we can borrow from our compatriots across the, I guess it wasn't the Paramount lot back then, it was Desilu Studios, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. The thing is, like, you can see the cost cutting in, like, a lot of, as I said, like, sets being reused and things like that. But one thing about the original series is it's such a beautiful looking show. And there is such incredible costume work going on throughout even season three. You know, you look at like Whom Gods Destroy or Alon of Troyes, like they are really memorable visual episodes. So it's hard to say that like the cost cutting really comes through in a lot of the visual design of Star Trek. It's more just like you can see it kind of pulling at the seams of the storytelling more so.
Okay. Well, jumping over to The Next Generation. I think what we want to do is kind of talk through all the shows one by one, the final seasons, and then you and I can kind of do a ranking at the end here. It's interesting because, you know, I think a lot of our discussions are going to center around who is like the showrunner any given season. Mm-hmm. And Michael Piller had departed. Well, not departed. He was still an executive producer on The Next Generation, but he was focusing much more on Deep Space Nine. And Jerry Taylor was the showrunner while doing season 7 of Next Gen, but she was also co-creating Voyager, like maybe halfway through the season of The Next Generation as well.
Right.
You know, maybe her attention was split to a certain degree. There's interesting like Ron Moore quotes from like this AOL chat that he did in 1998. And he said, quote, "I wish we could have had a more coherent idea of what we wanted to accomplish in TNG's last year. Too much of it was random storytelling without a sense of bringing the show to a conclusion." And I kind of get it in like what you've got like the last couple episodes where you try to wrap up the Rolaren arc. Mm-hmm. You try to have Picard come to grips with Daemon Bok. And
people demanded the resolution to that one.
Well, yeah. And it's like it didn't really feel as if this is a show ready to wrap up threads, or they were doing it like just very kind of last minute. And I mean, Cam, there's some great episodes here. I mean, I love an episode like, say, Genesis, for example, but mm-hmm. other stuff, I think we talked about it last week as well, but Attached, I really like. But then you got stuff that, like, you know, like, I don't know, Masks, you know, Phantasms wasn't that great.
I kind of like Phantasms. It's kind of wacky.
Okay. I don't know if it's one of the most highly regarded among, like, broader fandom, but the thing is, like, I don't want to dunk on the final season too much because you also have things like Lower Decks as well. You know, you can tell it's another more of those kind of wobbly, haphazard season. It just kind of felt like the show had maybe run out of gas to a certain degree. And I think if they had done, let's say 15 episodes rather than the usual 26, I think it would have felt as there's more of a impetus on the writers to kind of close out a lot of threads, focus specifically on characters. I mean, if Geordi LaForge's only episode focus on him is like Interface, which is like episode 3 where his fake alien mom appears, and
that's a brutal one. Brutal.
You know, I think there would have been like, you know, like we like Sub Rosa, but it's not the most highly regarded episode of Next Generation. You could just kind of tell that I think the writers are just burnt out at this point.
Yeah, and as didn't Marina Sirtis say when we saw her at a convention that DS9 had taken all their best writers or scripts or whatever it was?
Yeah, she's talking about the scripts, and I was just like, well, I want to know exactly what scripts had been converted from TNG scripts to Deep Space Nine scripts for season 2 of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I'm sure DS9 is very sorry they took Move Along Home away from TNG.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just like, the problem is with TNG's legacy is, like, I think people remember season 7 as pretty strong because you go out with, you know, something like All Good Things, which is a fantastic series finale, one of the best ever made for television, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing about season 7 is it has enough highlights that you can almost trick yourself into thinking it's a great season, because you mentioned Lower Decks, but you have the 1-2 punch that falls right in the middle of the season of Parallels and the Pegasus, which are like iconic, legendary episodes that I go back to again and again. And suddenly you're like, oh, those are season 7? Season 7 must have been pretty great. But then you like look around it and you're like, oh, Inheritance. Oh, Force of Nature. Oh, those weren't particularly great. And after that, it really is kind of this like run of mediocre episodes with like a Lower Decks thrown in and then a slam bang finale that really wraps the whole thing up beautifully. But it's a lot of like mediocre episodes. And it's kind of like when you go back to like a really strong season, like season 3 or 4, you've got all these legendary episodes, and then you'll get one in the middle where you're like, oh, that one's kind of a, you know, that's a phone it in episode kind of the week. Whereas I feel like with season 7, there's more of those types of episodes. They're not grim slogs, but they are very, very forgettable.
it is the least consistent of all the seasons from seasons 3 onward. I would definitely take season 7 of Next Gen over the first two seasons of Next Gen myself. But I don't know. I think the show was really on a roll from seasons 3 through to season 6. And I that's a pretty good roll, you know, when you're producing like 100 episodes altogether. And then maybe you get into a bit more of a skid when you get into that final seventh season.
I just wonder, too, like you mentioned Jerry Taylor was off developing other things. I also wonder how much their attention at a certain point is focused on launching the TNG crew into the movies, where it's like, oh, yeah, we got to finish season 7. And, you know, they've said that, like, they wrote All Good Things very quickly because they had to work on Generations. And it's like, how much of, like, how much investment do you have in that final season when you are already basically getting ready to, you know, launch the Enterprise D onto the big screen? So you almost feel like season 7 is kind of just like a victory lap before you really move on to bigger things?
I think that was probably what the case was. Like, people, it wasn't like, I don't know, can you really say goodbye to your family, you know, in that final episode if you know that they're going to be back in just a couple months, you know? I think they said, what was it, like a 1 week break in filming between like All Good Things and Star Trek Generations, you know? And you got the same cast members coming back. You got the same writers coming back. You've got the same crew coming back, even to the point that it's the same episodic director doing the feature film. You've got the same composers, you know? It was just really like, are they really saying goodbye in that final season? Like, it didn't really, like, until you get to the last five episodes, you know, where you're like, how do we wrap up, you know, Wesley Crusher? How do we wrap up Alexander? And it's just kind of like, I don't know. It just, that sense of finality and wrapping up threads, it just seemed as if they were, I don't know, kind of phoning it in to a certain degree.
Was there any characters beyond Sela who they didn't kind of have their wedged in farewell episode that they should have?
I mean, Loxana, she got Dark Page, and I think that's just such a depressing bummer of an episode. But by then she had already kind of been doing DS9 episodes, so it wasn't like we needed some sort of Loxana and Troy closure.
Yep.
After Dark Page, I guess. I don't know. Moose Riker, maybe. you know. No. We needed Pulaski to come back and really, you know, tie up that thread there.
That one, actually, I would have been very in favor of. It would have been, I'm sure, weird. And I'm sure they would have been thinking, why are we doing this? You know, this is a different era of television. Why are we bringing back a failed character from season 2 to do a farewell episode? But I've always felt like this kind of sense of, like, they should have, at the very least, had a line of dialogue explaining what happened to Dr. Pulaski.
It was a different era. I don't think anyone cared. I really don't.
Yeah. Even if they just said, like, when Beverly came back, there, you know, there was a line of like, oh, Pulaski's taking my position at Starfleet Medical. I'd be like, oh, awesome. Okay, I know where that character went.
Sure.
Jumping
over to Deep Space Nine, I think this is an entirely different animal than what we're getting with the original series and what we're getting with the Next Generation. You know, going in, you know, from somebody who was watching it live at the time, the viewers kind of knew that this would be the final season. You'd want to wrap up the Dominion War arc. It was interesting, though, because I do remember Sacrifice of Angels. A lot of people at the time were like, oh, okay, so that's the end of the Dominion War, right? And
That's a very, very lame ending to that war.
Well, it's just you retake Deep Space Nine, and people are like, oh, okay, so that must be the end of the Dominion War. Like, people didn't really think it was going to be lasting for, like, you know, the remainder of the series. But you kind of going into the seventh season, you figured you're going to have to wrap that up. But also going in, you have the whole Jadzia Dax situation, and particularly the Dax symbiont being transferred over to somebody else. You know, you're going to have to deal with what does that mean for relationships. I think most importantly for Worf, you know, and to a lesser degree, Bashir's ongoing pursuit of the Dax symbiont, you know. It's also very unique, and this is the first time where, you know, you have the writers say, we have something we'd like to call the final chapter. And you have 10 episodes dedicated to this very serialized storytelling in which you are wrapping up all of these loose threads. And, you know, you're covering characters from, like, Descartes, and Kai Winn, you know, going to like, hey, what's Rom going to be doing moving forward? You know, how do we wrap up all these arcs with our main characters? And I think they did this, you know, spoiler alert, much more successfully than, say, TNG or TOS did in those final seasons.
Definitely. And I want to just say that when you mentioned Sacrifice of Angels, I actually got it mixed up with Tears of the Prophets.
Oh.
So that's what I was thinking of when I was thinking of the lame ending to the Dominion War, where it's Jadzia is killed, the end, Sisko shucking clams.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought you're being your usual heterodox self when you're like, no, Sacrifice of Angels, boo, that episode sucked.
No, not at all. Love that episode. But yeah, the thing about season 7 was too, like, it's imposing enough for, I'm sure, for the creators to like wrap up this war they've been carrying through multiple seasons. But then they also had, kind of tying into Tears of the Prophets, this disadvantage where they also have to set up Ezri Dax kicking off season 7. That's not easy. You now have to get an audience invested in this character, you know, a new actor coming onto the show who's going to play a pivotal role. And that's now kind of interfering with your overall war story plans. And so you have to do that satisfyingly in a way where people are invested emotionally. And the fact that they do it and kind of make it seem effortless is really impressive. But then also, you know, they're introducing, say, you know, Vic Fontaine is a pretty significant part of season 7.
He was introduced in season 6, though.
He was, but he plays like a much bigger role in season 7.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's like this show, you would think like a lot of showrunners would be like, let's focus on what our main story is and just wrap that up, as opposed to start introducing new elements. A lot of the time, people could complain and say, like, they were bogging it down with new additional characters we didn't need. Somehow they make it seem so seamless in season 7 DS9 that it's unbelievable. The only moment where I go, like, this feels a little bit wonky in season 7 is when we have Extreme Measures right near the end of the season, kind of wrapping up Luther Sloan, where I go, like, this feels kind of odd being injected, like, you know, two episodes before the end of the show. That feels a little weird, but other than that, it does feel like remarkably seamless.
Well, yeah, with regards to the Section 31 character there, I believe at the time they were saying, with regards to Extreme Measures, like they just wanted to give one last adventure for O'Brien and Bashir to go on. And I think they're under certain budget constraints, which is why that episode is mostly focused on just standing sets, you know, and there's not a ton of VFX featured there. Iris Stephen Bear, the showrunner for season 7, he had been the showrunner effectively, I think, since kind of midway through season 3. Or was it season 4 when Brial died? But I think what happened was...
Never forget, Tyler.
But effectively, like, Life Support was the episode where, you know, Iris Stephen Bear and Michael Piller disagreed quite a bit about what to do with the Brial character. And, you know, Iris Stephen Bear, he said, look, I feel very, very strongly that we do need to kill the character off. And then from there on, Michael Piller took kind of a step back from the series and is kind of in, you know, Iris Stephen Bear's hands ever since then. So we have like a very auteur-driven series moving forward with, you know, Iris Stephen Bear behind the wheel going into the final season. And he gave an interview, and in it he says, you know, in the 7th season, I want to make sure that no story remains on the sidelines. I've told everyone this should be the strangest season yet. We should do whatever we want, get every story out of our system we want to tell. Go places where people don't expect the show to go, wrap up as many threads of this series as possible, and end on a satisfying note. Do you think mission accomplished there?
I do. I think it's actually pretty astonishing how well that mission is accomplished in season 7. DS9, where, like, if someone came to me and said that season 7 DS9 is their favorite season, I would not think they were insane. I might not agree, but I would be like, I can kind of understand why you would feel that way. Whereas, like, if someone said, you know, my favorite season of, you know, TNG is season 7, I'd be a little thrown. I'd be like, oh, really? Well, that's fascinating. Okay, explain yourself, sir or ma'am. I would love to know. But, yeah, like, I think, like, it's really... Well, you were talking about Iris Stephen Bear there. I was just thinking, like, I guess the thing about DS9 is you mentioned auteur, but it's like the most consistent showrunner over the course of a Star Trek series in comparison to any of the other shows. Because TNG, you had some switches along the way. Voyager, you have switches along the way. And even, you know, Enterprise, the final season is Manny Coto. It's just interesting that, like, the one that's the most confident is the one that, for the most part, had one showrunner. Obviously, season one is a little different for DS9, but largely it's the Ira Stephen Bear overseen show.
Yeah. There were some mandates, though, going in. You know, essentially, Rick Berman was like, you know, do what you want, but you just come on. Like, this is a Star Trek universe. You can't really destroy the Federation. And I do recall Ira Stephen Bear, he originally wanted the series to end with Benny Russell kind of like writing the story, as if, you know, like Deep Space Nine was just a story that Benny Russell had been writing. And then Rick Berman was like, WTF, like, what does this mean for Voyager? And Ira Stephen Bear was like, I don't care. Like, I'm not writing Voyager. You know, and so they couldn't really go with the Benny Russell ending. I think it would have been quite controversial had they gone down that route. I'm glad they did not. I don't think it would have worked, you know, personally. But I think Ira Stephen Bear had also realized at a certain point, when you have a 1960s lounge singer popping up in all of these episodes, that the studio wasn't even paying attention to what they were doing anymore. So he felt as if he could kind of go to like these like wacky places. So I don't know. Like, it just, the thing is, like, you could tell that the show wasn't being hampered by a laundry list of studio demands, and it was just trying to be its best self, you know, going into that final season. And I think it was a very, very successful final season. But we're also getting into the era of television in which that is much more on the mind of TV show runners at that point, as well as studios, I think, you know, like, how do we wrap things up? Where it wasn't the case necessarily, you know, just a couple years earlier when TNG was wrapping things up.
No, but you also compare the final season of DS9 to the end game for X-Files, which was running pretty close to concurrently, and another show that was embracing more of a serialized feel like DS9 was, and look how that one by the end was just a complete and total mess. And it makes like DS9 seem like that much more of a miracle, because it would have been so easy for it to turn into a mess. But I mean, Ira Stephen Bear had such a very clear, I think, overview as to what this show should be and how it should end. I mean, the Benny Russell ending may have been a little too Saint Elsewhere to pull that yeah. one off, but I mean, other than that, it really does feel like he was managing to keep all these kind of balls in the air and juggle them in a way that really is impressive. It's kind of like when you look at the MCU and the way they kept that initial, you know, Iron Man through Endgame story arc going. And then in comparison to the stuff that came later, you go like, huh, they made it seem easy, but it's really, really hard.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you is that Esri Dax is the agent Monica Reyes of Star Trek.
I guess she is, isn't she? If we are to make that parallel, I guess she is Reyes. And that does not speak well to if the character comes back in the future then.
Yeah, that's a good point. Spoiler alert for where we find Agent Reyes in the X-Files revival a couple years ago. I like Doggett and Reyes. I mean, it's not the same as like Mulder and Scully, but I don't know. Put Robert Patrick in anything and I will happily eat it all up.
The best thing that ever happened to Doggett and Reyes was Einstein and whatever the other guy's name was in the reboot series.
They were so boring. They were so boring in vanilla. Wasn't it one of the Amell brothers was like the other agent?
It was, yeah. And I'm totally blanking on that character's name, but
that's how boring he was.
I think they wanted us to want to see a show about those two.
Yeah.
Boy, did they fail at that.
I'm waiting for like another X-Files revival, not with, you know, Mulder and Scully, but like just that format where you need to find two actors that have chemistry and then just come up with strange monsters of the week stories to throw them into. And, you know, it didn't work that initial revival season. I think there's one good episode and, what was it? The Were Lizard episode.
Yeah.
And then there were two okay episodes and the rest was just pretty bad. They kind of got a handle on it, I guess, in that second revival season where they had like more time to kind of stretch, and they had like 10 episodes versus I think just 6.
The problem was at that point, kind of the novelty of X-Files being back was kind of gone, and anyone who'd watched the first revival season was like, I'm good. I have seen those characters. I am good. It's too bad because, yeah, the second season of the revival run is better. I would have happily watched more, but I think like for X-Files to have a life going forward, they probably need to wrestle it out of Chris Carter's hands and give it to someone who understands what makes that series and that concept work and can bring a really fresh, original vision to it. But someone with, like, legit capability, not just, like, rando person, please make me a new X-Files show.
Okay, Michael Bay, time for you to venture into television, serialized television.
That would be an incredible, incredible film if he made the Michael Bay's X-Files movie.
Okay, let's jump over to Star Trek Voyager. Again, we have a shuffling of the showrunners. We have Brandon Braga. He's off to develop Star Trek Enterprise. So Kenneth Biller, a longtime writer of the show, one of my favorite writers on Voyager, he takes over for season 7 of Voyager. I think that the legacy of Voyager, it's enough to overcome the wobbliness of season 7. I really don't. I think this is Voyager's far and away least successful season. I'm a real big fan of those first three seasons. I think they kind of get overlooked because it's kind of pre 7 of 9, but they're very much like character oriented in a way that maybe we get more of the high concept sci-fi stuff that Brandon Braga was so known for. But I don't know, man, like this seventh season, just there's a lot of like solid episodes, you know, maybe a kind of the workforce two-parter, mm-hmm. but then there's other like really like, I don't know, like lame stuff, you know, like let's wrap up, you know, the Neelix arc. He's going to end up on an asteroid colony. I'm like, okay, let's kill off Joe Carey for some reason.
I was going to mention, yeah, Joe Carey. We needed that wrap up to Joe Carey.
You know, I mean, there's some solid ones in here, you know, but I just feel like this one, I don't know. How are you on the seventh season of Voyager? Is it as bad as I think it is? Or do you think I'm just being a little bit too squeaky when it comes to something that it was fine, but not that bad?
It feels lower wattage than the seasons that came just before it. And one of the things that Voyager was so famous for was these like kind of epic two-parters. And when you get to like season 7, you're getting things like Workforce I enjoy, but it is lower wattage than some of those other extended stories we got on Voyager, as well as like, you know, the second part of Unimatrix Zero is nothing great. Flesh and Blood, which is a single episode, but it's a longer episode, is also not necessarily as inspired as you'd hope. And so I'm kind of left with like a string of episodes that I think in some ways it might be a little stronger than, say, the mediocre episodes of season 7 TNG, where I don't feel like there's as many poor ones.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's no masks in here, really. It's just that, like, not a lot of them really leap off the page when you're scanning through the list of episode titles. Something like The Void is a really strong episode, but it's a lot of episodes where I go, oh, yeah, that was kind of amusing. You know, say Author, for example, with the Doctor. That's kind of an amusing episode, but it doesn't, like, stick in your mind. And that's what I find to be the case with a lot of the episodes of Season 7 Voyager. There's just far fewer really cool, memorable episodes. I mean, Q2 is memorable, but not necessarily for reasons that it probably wants to be memorable.
Well, okay, so we're in this era of television where you are kind of trying to wrap up threads. Were there really that many threads to wrap up on Voyager other than getting the crew home?
Well, that's the thing that's so interesting about it, is that not really, because they were headed in a direction, they left all these previous storylines in the past, other than Joe Carey. But like,
that was so weird.
Like, it was weird.
Yeah.
But like, it's so interesting to me that when you get to like season 7, you're getting an episode like Body and Soul, which is like the swap episode with Seven and the Doctor, because it's kind of like a light novelty episode. That's not the kind of thing you expect in maybe a wrap-up season where you think, like, there's probably important things to pay off. But because alien species like the Melon, for example, or the Kazon are so far in the rearview mirror, there's no, like, need or requirement on the part of the show to give you that kind of final story involving those alien species in their final season. So they really are kind of almost like, I don't want to say spinning their wheels, but they're just generating a string of character-driven, high-concept episodes that just more or less stand alone, but don't tell you anything about the, you know, kind of the ongoing adventure or wrapping up the story. Just a lot of stuff, though, I noticed with giving Seven more to do in the final season in terms of exploring her humanity, which is maybe the one arc that they have that's running throughout.
I just point to Deep Space Nine, where you can tell they're building up to something. Where with Voyager, it doesn't really feel, you know, in the final stretch of episodes, that they're building up to anything. And then we get, you know, just kind of an adventure of the week, you know, in Renaissance Man. And then all of a sudden, it's Endgame. And Endgame, I've kind of come around a little bit more on over the years. You know, I just remember watching it at the time that it aired. And I think it's still one of the big criticisms of the show that I think is fair, and that you don't really get to see the crew embrace their loved ones or see them back at home, really. You know, it's just, you just see them being greeted by starships at the very end. And I just wonder if, like, the most radical thing that they could have done was, you know, the episode, the final episode, pretty much in the first act, starts with them arriving at home through some, like, random wormhole. And then maybe they realize, you know, Cam, home is what you make of it. And their home is really Voyager, you know? Like, just something like that. It could have been far more interesting than, you know, trying to get through this transwarp conduit at breakneck speed and cripple the Borg as we know it.
Is Renaissance Man the most inconsequential penultimate episode we've come across so far? Because when I look at, like, TNG, you have Preemptive Strike, which is saying farewell to Ro. That's a pretty momentous event. Dogs of War on DS9, which is tying right into the finale. And then All Our Yesterdays is, like, one of the really great episodes of that season 3 TOS. Whereas, like, Renaissance Man, does anyone really remember that episode?
I don't think so. What was the penultimate episode of the animated series, Cam?
That would be How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth, which is the one with the big Mayan dragon, which is popped up on Lower Decks. So, like, it has an iconic visual that at least... Like, okay, name me the most iconic visual in Renaissance Man.
I couldn't.
Right? Yeah. It's so weird that when you're getting to the end of Voyager, which the showrunners know, this is a series about getting home. Shouldn't there be some sort of, like, I don't know, leading up to the finality? I would have been almost better to swap the Neelix episode with Renaissance Man and say goodbye to Neelix in the penultimate episode.
Yeah, I think that would have been packed a bigger punch, and at least give it some sort of like stronger threads of finality, even like something like Journey's End, where you're wrapping up, you know, Wesley about like 4 or 5 episodes before the end of the series. You know, I think that's kind of a solid thing to do there. I don't know, man. It just, like, the 7th season of Voyager, it doesn't end with the greatest of finales. And it's a lot of, like, kind of solid B episodes throughout, but not as many A-plus episodes.
I really like your idea, though, of maybe even having, like, a final episode isn't Endgame, but, like, an episode about them being back home, you know, meeting back up with their families and just finding out kind of where they are. I don't know that it's, like, the ratings extravaganza that maybe the show wants or the network wants, but, like, that would have been satisfying. And you and I were talking before we started recording about Masters of the Air, the new World War II series that's been running on Apple. And we were talking about, you know, Band of Brothers and The Pacific, which aired before that series. And the way that, like, the final episode is more of like almost like a breather of, like, okay, the fighting is stopped. Where are our characters at the end of this journey? Something like that would have been, I think, really impactful for Voyager, because what happens when these people get home? What is it like when Janeway, you know, meets up with Mark on the street when she gets home? Things like that would be, I think...
Who gets the dog?
Who gets the dog? Yeah. Is the dog still alive? We don't know. Like, yeah. I would like to know kind of the answers to those things, and it would be kind of like a really satisfying breather at the end of a series that would actually feel like it's taking a creative risk as opposed to kind of trying to replicate All Good Things.
I guess Star Trek Prodigy flashbacks are all we can hope for at this point.
Well, exactly. And I'm saying I want them to take a creative risk. And well, that might lead us into Enterprise in its final season.
Well, yeah, let's get into it. As you said earlier, Manny Coto takes over as the showrunner from Brandon Braga. I think a very strong season 3 with Enterprise. And mm-hmm. I think they kind of realized maybe... just time for some new blood in there. You know, Brandon Braga had been working on Star Trek nonstop for, God, like, how many years at this point? At least, like, a decade plus, you know?
Yeah, and very burnt out.
Yeah.
He talks about it so much on the Enterprise Blu-ray set. He was just like, by the end, he was done. Yeah.
But it's interesting because Manny Coto comes in, he's a fan of the series. of the Star Trek franchise. And I remember he was doing interviews at the time. He kept saying, like, what I want to do is kind of answer the questions a lot of fans might have about this era. And I was like, okay, that's like an interesting perspective. And so we get like an explanation as to why the Vulcans of the Enterprise era are so much more duplicitous than the ones that we know in the TOS and TNG era. We get some explanations, very convoluted with regards to the whole look of the Klingons. Mm-hmm. You know, we're playing around with, you know, everything from the Soong legacy, you know, a mirror universe as well. This is a fun season. Does it feel as if they're leading up to, and now we have to say goodbye to everybody? No, but I think we still get some conclusions with the Demons finale. What was it was a two-parter. What was it, like Terra Firma and Demons? Is that it, Cam?
Terra Prime.
Terra Prime. I knew there was a Terra in there. But, you know, and like it was kind of a solid wrap-up to the series that if they had continued going forward, there would have been more story to tell, for sure. Because I think the wrap-up there is a lot of kind of the character arcs that had been going on, you know, especially with, they're giving everybody something to do, whether it is Mayweather or Reed, and now you have kind of the Trip and T'Pol kind of relationship, being a lot of focus being put on that in that final episode, that penultimate episode, I should say. I think this is a great final season. You know, I don't think they necessarily wanted it to be the final season, but they kind of left things open. I think season five, whatever parallel universe that exists in, I'd love to see where the story went from there. I don't know. This to me is kind of up there with Deep Space Nine, even if the intent wasn't necessarily to wrap everything up in kind of a neat bow the way that it was on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. It definitely does not feel like kind of a natural transition point into an ending, but if you're going to have a final season of a show and it is a quality-wise, you know, on par with like season four of Enterprise, I mean, we were talking about like the string of mediocre episodes in TNG and Voyager's runs at the end there, and you compare that to what Enterprise is doing, it's unbelievably entertaining and fun and engaging stories through almost through and through. I mean, the one with Emery Erickson and the transporter,
that Daedalus, one's,
yeah. that one's maybe not so hot, but I love that, you know, you were saying that, you know, Manny Coto's a fan. He wants to answer those questions. What I love about it is that he's answering questions that don't feel as obvious as what many people would do if they were like, I need to answer the questions of Star Trek. You know, the way we get, like, I've made fun of this so many times in the past, and I'll do it again. How did Han Solo get his name and his holster?
Yeah.
We need to find that out. Whereas, the dice that hang in the Millennium Falcon that everyone remembers, you know, how did he get those? Does anyone really care? Whereas it seems like Manny Coto, the things he cares about, explaining, yeah, like, the Vulcan attitudes, like, I don't know that that's the sort of thing that if you just toss someone in, we're like, hey, inject some Star Trek, you know, fan service, or, you know, pay off people's love of the original series, that they would go that route. They'd be more like wondering, how did so-and-so get this ship, you know, or trying to just tie it into very on-the-nose specific details of the show. I like that him, it's so much of, like, talking about the evolution of world-building.
He did have, Manny Coto had the unenviable task of kicking things off by wrapping up the Future Guy Cold War, Temporal Cold War arc, you know, with the Stormfront two-parter. I mean, I think for what they had, for him to have the series suddenly end up in the Second World War with alien Nazis, he took what was given to him, he made the best of it, and we get like a solid episode three, which is Home, in which we're kind of talking about what we're talking about with the end of Voyagers. Like, wouldn't it be nice to just kind of sit with the characters back at home after an extended period in which they're on like this long mission away from their loved ones? And I think that was a really solid sign that this show was going in the right direction with this new showrunner in the final season, even if we didn't necessarily bank on it being the final season at the time. I also love the fact that they're kind of planting the seeds for, you know, how the Federation came to be, you know, especially with the arc involving the Andorians and the Enar, mm-hmm. and also planting the seeds for kind of the Earth-Romulan War, had we gotten like a season five of Enterprise. And yeah, I don't know, it sucks that we never got to see those seeds come to bear fruit, but it's still exciting to think about without me being utterly devastated that these were cliffhangers that never were explained.
Yeah, it feels in some ways like a miracle season. And season three, Enterprise, I love to pieces as well, the Zindi War. But that is more following almost like an evolution of what DS9 was doing with the Dominion War. Whereas like with season four, it feels like they're kind of creating this new animal of something that could be really interesting to see going forward, which is these mini arcs. And I'm almost tormented every time we like go to a Star Trek con or find out some new information about the hypothetical stories of season five, Enterprise, you know, the Romulan War or the Cloudminders prequel, things like that. Because I'm like, on one hand, it's so juicy to hear these details, but on the other, it's so frustrating we never got to see them because, you know, other than like the opener, which basically just easily hand waves all the events of the temporal Cold War aside so we can move forward, everything else is so compelling that I'm like, I want to know what those stories would have been like, but I guess I just have to be satisfied with these really great Andorian and Vulcan and Klingon and Augment arcs.
It some fan service for sure, but it didn't feel like cheap fan service.
No.
That's my way of segueing into Picard season three.
Ouch.
I can't look. I think this is far and away the strongest season of Star Trek Picard.
I think my home movies that I shot myself are stronger seasons than much of Star Trek Picard.
Look, the thing I keep asking folks, you know, who are like, wow, Star Trek Picard season three was so amazing. I'm like, well, what did you love about it other than the fact that they're like familiar faces and familiar sets making an appearance? And I think everybody comes back to Shaw, Captain Shaw. I'm like, okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I get that. Like, I thought
he's great.
Captain Shaw was great. You know, like that's what you want to do if you are kind of introducing a new character, make you invested in a character who's quite unlike other captains we've seen in Star Trek before. You could tell, yeah, they meant this to be the final season of Star Trek Picard. There is a sense of finality here while leaving the door open for future adventures. I do think that the introduction of Jack Crusher, I think that was compelling as well, you know. I'm not going to slam the show too much for having, quote unquote, what I derisively refer to as cheap fan service. A lot of the stuff worked, especially the Geordi stuff. Surprisingly, mm-hmm. the Data stuff actually kind of worked for me, where I was very worried it would end up kind of cheap. I don't know. It carries on the ongoing thread of Troi kind of being dismissed throughout TNG and the movies, and she gets very little to do here as well. And Marina Sirtis definitely brought that up during the TNG panel in Las Vegas, right in front of head writer Terry Metalis.
Yep.
He looked very uncomfortable when she was criticizing him in front of thousands of people. You know, the finale itself, I remember, okay. You and I think the appearance of the Enterprise D in the penultimate episode was meant to give us chills. And you and I,
yeah,
it kind of left us, you and I particularly, cold. Whereas I don't think that's how general fandom approached it. I really do think most people got chills from it. I think the problem with you and me, we were
there's many.
Kind of dissecting it. Yeah, a lot. Believe me, there's a lot. But you and I were dissecting the show kind of from a storytelling perspective, week to week. You know, what does this all mean? What does it add up to? What's all this mystery box, red eyeball sort of stuff that is just kind of like annoying us? You know, so I know this sounds like very dismissive, but I remember I rewatched the final 15 minutes of the penultimate episode, as well as the final hour plus of the series finale. And I didn't have my storytelling dissector hat on. And I just kind of went with it. I was like, okay, this actually works for me on an emotional level in a way I was not necessarily expecting. You know, but I would like to think that other shows can stand up to more of this storytelling dissection that you and I were engaging in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like season three Picard is something just of a victory lap for the TNG crew. And yes, obviously, Troi and maybe Worf aren't serviced as well as they could have been. But overall, it is kind of this celebration of what TNG accomplished. There's obviously a lot of iconography going on. We are leaving our characters in a much more satisfying place than Nemesis did in 2002. So I can completely understand why people love it for that, and also why it is successful. I think for me, where I struggle with this season is, like, when we are looking at the other seasons, I want the final season that I want to revisit. You know, I want to sit and rewatch Enterprise season 4. I'll happily go through season 3 of the original series. DS9 is always a pleasure to go through that final season. With Picard season 3, I've got 2 points here.
Okay.
One, I find that, like, I'd want to watch maybe the finale, the wrap-up to it, and maybe a couple of the episodes that really jumped out to me, like No-Win Scenario was one we were really into. I don't really want to sit and watch all 10 episodes of this because there's so much teasing of future episodes that I find it very frustrating. There's a lot of just, like, mystery box storytelling that, because I know the outcome, I don't want to sit through an hour of television teasing Jack Crusher's visions. Like, that's just not going to be interesting on the rewatch. So I find that frustrating. There's also the sense that when we've been talking about these final seasons, we're talking about how they wrap up the journey of the series that they are part of. I don't think season 3 TNG really has almost anything to do with the story of Picard the show. It is really much more of the TNG send-off than the Picard the series send-off.
Well, there was no Picard story to tell. The show had different showrunners every single season.
Yeah.
It was very incoherent. You know, so, like, how do we send this series off? Like, I don't know. Like, there's really nothing to send off here.
And I also think, like, had this been a single season TNG reunion show, that would maybe change or reframe the way I even think about it, because it wouldn't have the baggage of those first two seasons. And we wouldn't sit there and go, like, well, they killed, like, and just dismissed all of their characters from their show to bring back the TNG crew and build a season around them. That's weird.
It seemed like very dismissive of the two seasons that had come before. But I think maybe showrunner Terry Metalis, he just kind of looked at what had come before, and I can kind of understand why he didn't really care. Like, yeah, didn't care, you know, about these characters. You know, did I really need to see what happened next with Elnor or Jurati? No. And believe me, I did not need to see what happened next with Raffi, but they still brought her back anyway and saddled her with Worf and just kept repeating the same story arc for like 6 episodes.
Doesn't it feel, though, like a real, like, you know, screw you to the first two seasons that, like, yeah, okay, Raffi does carry over and has a fair amount to do in season 3 Picard, but, like, I'm not asking for any arc or anything like that. I think that's probably off the table, but, like, you'd think they would have worked in, like, an Elnor or Soji cameo, like a Wesley in Star Trek Nemesis level cameo or something, just to, like, acknowledge the overall series.
Terry Metalis kept saying how much they were under the gun when it came to budget, and yeah, they said that maybe those ideas were floated, but, like, what would it mean for some meaningless cameo that would cost them X number of dollars when they could put X number of dollars into something else that would actually have more meaning in that final season? So I can understand kind of the clinical, cutthroat nature of that. But also, let's be honest, if the creative people behind seasons 1 and 2 were being honest with themselves, I don't think they would come out and say, like, these were smashing successes. Like, I think that they would admit that they failed. They really did to create something very compelling. I think Picard season 1 had a couple moments, especially the Data farewell. I think the first 2 episodes of Picard season 2 had some interesting stuff, but the remainder of it was just kind of like a miserable slog to sit through. Season 2, that is.
Yeah, when we did the rewatch of season 2, that was not one of my favorite experiences in research for this show.
I had a blast because as we were rewatching it, I was going back and listening to our podcasts, and it was you and I becoming increasingly angry with the show. And it was just mostly me laughing at us getting angry with how bad that show was in season 2.
I did that as well. And it was, like, interesting because knowing what the show is, and then going back and hearing that journey of discovery, it was rather compelling.
Okay, Cam, so let's take a look at all the seasons here. Do we want to start, like, from the worst and then go to the first? I think that'd be kind of the fun, or I don't know, what do you feel like? How should we do this?
I think that's probably the best way. And I'll just quickly comment on, in case anyone wants to know, the original animated series, which we didn't comment on it because it was only like 6 episodes. It was a very truncated final run, but I will say, like, those 6 episodes quality wise pretty much on par with season 1, so you know, not too bad as far as the animated series goes. And when you end with the counterclock incident, not too shabby.
Okay. Weakest season. It's interesting because we're covering like three different eras of television, and mm-hmm. there are different things you're trying to accomplish here. And so I'm trying to think of them like holistically, and I have to be honest, like, I think Voyager is the weakest final season. There's a lot of like B minus episodes, not a lot of A plus episodes, where I think there's a couple D's in the original series, but there's also a lot of A's. And I don't think Turnabout Intruder necessarily hurt the legacy of the original series, but I don't think Endgame necessarily improved the legacy of Voyager. I don't know. I would put Voyager last in terms of final seasons.
I was kind of like, juggling between it, the original series, and TNG. But TNG, there's just a few too many classic episodes. Whereas with Voyager Season 7, I think Body and Soul is probably like one of the big memorable ones in the void. But beyond that, I don't know. It falls almost more damningly under the forgettable umbrella. Uh-huh. Whereas like TNG, you'd be like, oh man, remember Sub Rosa? What the hell was that? Or Masks. I don't know that you have those reactions to Season 7 Voyager. You're just like, yeah, it was fine.
Okay, we'll have Voyager last. What would you propose as the second to last, I guess?
I think I might... Ooh, it's tough because I think like TNG has like such a string of forgettable episodes. But the problem is, I'm also taking into consideration, when you look at Season 3 TOS... it has some real highlights, but when you are comparing it to the two seasons that came before, is it more of a fall off than Season 7 TNG to what came before? That's the question I'm kind of grappling with.
The other thing, though, you've got All Good Things to close it off in your final season. And I know we did a different ranking for series finales, you know, but I still think that this far exceeds, you know, it gave some finality in TNG that we did not necessarily get in the original series. That's why I can't put TNG at the bottom of the list next to Voyager. I for me, my vote goes to the original series.
Because also, I mean, finishing strong is obviously like that's what you want in showbiz, right? You want the audience to want more, and All Good Things is the way to do that. But also, even just like kicking off your season, you have Descent Part 2, which is pretty solid. And then you have over on the TOS side, Spock's Brain, which, I love it. It's a hell of a lot of fun, but I don't know that it's how you kick off Season 3 with promise.
Okay, so we both agree Voyager, then TOS. Here's a question I want to pose to you. What would you rather rewatch? The final season of The Next Generation or the final season of Picard?
Oh, I think... I think I would rather watch TNG, the final season.
Yeah, same here.
Well, now I'm even questioning, would I rather watch the original series over Picard Season 3, which I definitely would.
Well, you know what? Too late. We have...
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay.
I'm shouted down by the audience that is yelling into their earbuds, yeah.
Can we put Picard Season 3 next up on the list then?
Yes, I'd say so, yeah.
So then would it be fair to put TNG right after Picard Season 3?
Yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
So it comes out to kind of Enterprise and Deep Space Nine, I suppose, to kind of duke it out. I don't know if it's too much of a debate between us. I just think that there is an intentional sense of finality going into Deep Space Nine that we did not necessarily get in Enterprise. But I think both seasons are super strong, like very excellent final seasons.
Yeah, it just feels like the DS9 wrap-up is like the end of a great book where you are just... canceling all your plans to sit in that chair and just read that last 100 pages or so. Like, it's so absorbing. Whereas, like, Enterprise, there's so many great arcs. I love that season. But, like, you got Stormfront kicking it off. You got a terrible finale. You've got, you know, your Emery Erickson transporter episode. Like, it's kind of like experimenting with what Enterprise could be going forward. It's not necessarily, like, that super confident, just... home run swing at the end of the journey. So I think, like, for that reason, I would put Enterprise next and then close out with DS9.
Okay, so why don't I go through the rankings here for the final seasons of Star Trek. When Discovery wraps up, We'll see where it ranks.
We have to remember to rank it in the episode where we cover the finale.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Cam, number six, Voyager, number five, the original series, and number four, Star Trek Picard, number three, TNG, number two, Enterprise, and number one, Deep Space Nine. How do you feel about that ranking?
I feel pretty good about that. I think, yeah, that's a solid ranking.
Do you think listeners are pantomiming slapping us in the face for some of these picks? I think specifically about maybe where TNG ranks, kind of right in the middle there, where I think a lot of people remember how great the finale is, but they kind of forget about a lot of the bad to mediocre episodes. That's there are a lot in that final season of TNG.
I think people might have stronger opinions about Voyager being last. I think there might be some that are like thinking TOS, the final season, is legendary for being such a huge step down. Like, there's no other answer than that being the worst.
It's just there's too many like great episodes in that final season, and there really aren't that many like fantastic episodes in the final season of Voyager. That's where it comes down to for me.
I also just, and I think we mentioned it, but it's just like it doesn't feel like the resolution to an ongoing journey the way that DS9 does. It just feels like kind of episodic, you know, hours of television happening and then finally a big wrap up on Voyager. So it's not just like the episode content, it's also the form of that final season as well.
Yeah. Okay. So we wanted to do this format, Cam, because we debated like whether you and I wanted to prepare for the final season of Discovery by talking about expectations. And then I think you pointed out that we'd probably just be reiterating the same complaints that we have about the show that all of our listeners have heard many a time before. And so why beat that dead horse? I don't know, Cam, going into, okay. Just the early word on the final season of Discovery is that if you loved Star Trek Discovery, you're going to love this final season. To me, that sounds like kind of more of the same. And I think that sameness hasn't really been working for us, the seasons three and seasons four, at least.
Yeah, I mean, they've really been selling this as the adventure season, talking about how it's going to be much more fun than previous seasons. But like, I don't know that my biggest complaint with the show the last couple has been like their tone or playing things more serious or whatever. It's the way they write these stories that's been the problem.
They're exceptionally boring.
They're either boring or it's like scenes like Stormy Weather with like Zora the computer singing as fire rages around them. And I'm like, this is so melodramatic and silly that like it doesn't connect as a serious moment the way it's supposed to. It's like, the writing is such a mess that it doesn't really matter what they're going for in terms of tone. They could say the next season is a full-blown comedy because Star Trek comedy is always fun. But I'd go like, well, I don't know. Is it going to be written as well as the previous seasons? Then it doesn't matter.
Exactly. So
I think that's my concern is like you could say it's going to be an adventure. You know, it's like you could tell me you're going to make Indiana Jones and I'd be like, oh, cool. And they'll be like, Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. And I'm like, oh, that's not what I was hoping to hear. So, it's so much of a wait and see. But if it's going to be written at the same level of consistency as the last couple, it's hard to be optimistic.
So you're saying that Saru is the Shia LaBeouf of Star Trek Discovery. Just swinging through the jungle with the monkeys.
Is he the most likely to be swinging through the jungle with monkeys? I don't know.
I'd say so. Remember when he had to go running through the forest in CV Pacem Parabellum?
Oh, good call. Yeah, that was a classic moment from Star Trek Discovery.
Look, we'll dive into the season five premiere in a couple of weeks. I'm most interested in the series finale, like how they wrap things up with the characters, not necessarily the story arc that I'm sure there's going to be a lot of mystery box elements to it, a lot of cliffhangers, a lot of boring, poorly paced storylines, a lot of focus on Burnham. It's how they wrap things up by the end with the series finale, especially knowing that they went and did some additional shoots to kind of give some closure to the show. And I'm just fascinated where this series finale will ultimately rank in terms of wrapping things up in the Star Trek universe. You know, it's the show's been an adventure for us, Cam, for God, the last 7 years now. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I am very curious, like when we, because we've talked about like season finale or series finales, I should say, in the past as well. Like, is the series finale something that we find interesting? Like, I would like Discovery to go off the air leaving an impression because I would say like season four left almost no impression, really, other than tedium. I would like them to make some sort of decision where I go, whether I like it or don't like season five, there's something about it that I have to hold on to.
Yeah, even just give me a new character that is interesting, compelling, you know? Although we did get that last season with the doctor whose name I'm blanking on, but
Tarka.
Tarka, and then they kind of turned him into a loser like about like 2/3 of the way into the season. Or not a loser. They made him stupid. You know, I always hate it when like you have smart characters suddenly have to act stupid just to further the plot.
And we also have like a new villain this season, the Callum Keith Rennie character. So like
Is he a villain?
I think maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know who he is.
He's a Starfleet captain.
Oh, okay.
I think we have a pair of antagonists. They're thieves, you know. I like Callum Keith Rennie. I've seen him in a lot of Canadian drama series. He's also a big role in the Battlestar Galactica reboot. So I think he could kind of maybe bring some interesting elements as kind of a new kind of Star Trek captain. I think he's supposed to be kind of a wartime captain. I don't know. He could bring something interesting to the table.
Well, it's like I'm not no great lover of the Picard series, but I walked away really liking Captain Shaw. So, if Discovery, the final season, can give me a character or two that really pops, you know, the way that Shaw did, I'll be happy.
Is Callum Keith Rennie's character just a dipshit from Chicago? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, I mean, he doesn't look like someone who's from Chicago, but I guess we'll find out.
Okay. Hey, look, I'm sure it's a very diverse city, 1,000 years in the future.
Very much so. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod and leave reviews for us wherever you get your podcasts. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Well, love is in the air, Cam. We'll be tackling the classic Deep Space Nine episode. You are cordially invited. This is a fun one. I can't wait to tackle it. We talked about it here or there, just with regards to what it means for the Worf and Jadzia relationship. But it's almost kind of secretly a fun ensemble episode as well. I'm looking forward to taking a deep dive into the wedding episode for Worf and Jadzia.
And we perfectly timed this one with Valentine's Day.
Yes, perfectly.
Perfectly.
Do you remember that time? No. I just remember I got in trouble on one Valentine's Day when I double booked you and a partner for events on the same night, and I was like, "Oops."
What was really weird was how you kept both plans but bounced between the two rooms. It was like a French farce.
I was like, I was dressed as Mrs. Doubtfire the entire time.
What a night. Okay, you can of course reach us on the Twitter. I met Cam. V is in Valentine's Day with Tyler and his romantic partner, Smith.
You're never the third wheel, Cam. Don't worry. You can find me at Reportin. That's REP. P is in Picard's. Captain Liam Shaw was the best part of season three of Picard. ORTON.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed. You know, it's like you could tell me you're going to make Indiana Jones, and I'd be like, oh, cool. And they'll be like, Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. And I'm like, oh, that's not what I was hoping to hear.